Welcome to The Big Picture with your host, Harrison Newton. Hit the subscribe and share the word.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. It's great to have you here. I'm really excited for this episode today. I'm actually interviewing one of my favorite travel buddies, Alex. So welcome, Alex.
Thanks, man. It's great to be here.
Got the call up.
I think this is a perfect opportunity too. Most of your interviews have been New Zealand focused, and with the opening up of the Trans-Tasman and, you know, Anzac Day coming up, this is a perfect moment. This is very serendipitous, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, to have it now, this is fantastic. So I hope to win a few of your Kiwi listeners over. I know there has always been a bit of hostility between our two nations, socially, just friendly banter, of course.
Exactly. So that's what we're going to talk about today, is we're really trying to compare New Zealand and Australian cultures. And it's a great time to do it because we're about to get very close, like you said, with that Trans-Tasman bubble. It's going to be a warm hug. I'm expecting a lot of Australians. You know,
warm-hungered winter, just in time.
They're thinking tens of thousands of people are already booked to come in on the first day.
What's the reverse of that, I wonder? I think more Aussies are going to be keen to go to New Zealand than the other way around.
Exactly. You know, we got 5 million people. You've got to get a sprinkling, but there's 30 million Australians, because Australians never normally go to New Zealand. So there's 30 million people who haven't been to New Zealand, have heard the South Island's lovely in winter.
So yeah, you got the snow, you've got mountains. These are things that we don't have. So.
Exactly. And this is the best opportunity for them ever to come visit. So it's very relevant at the moment. We're getting in bed with each other, unfortunately.
You know, it's really funny. I saw an interview of Jacinda Ardern the other day, and she was basically doing a promo for travel to New Zealand. I thought that was hilarious that you have your prime minister doing that. And she actually did it pretty well, actually, which was
Was the message that you guys got? So you saw some message from Jacinda.
Okay, it wasn't a formal one. It was like she was being asked a lot of questions in regards to the Trans-Tasman bubble. And one of the people in the crowd asked, what would you suggest is a good reason for, like, why would Australians want to travel over to New Zealand and all that sort of stuff? And she was like, you want me to do a promo? Okay, yeah, let me just say we've got fantastic mountains and snow. It's just this vivid description of, like, what New Zealand has to offer. And
to I just get thought them that thinking. Was so... To get all the Australians so going,
You know what's really funny about it? I've always seen, like, New Zealand as, like, because obviously we can both live in each other's nations, and I've always seen New Zealand as like a plan B if like shit hits the fan, you know, like globally. It'd be like the perfect place. It's so isolated. It's like a fairly small population. You're pretty self-sufficient. You don't get invested into, like, the market with Asia and things like that as much as we do. We seem to be very reliant on that. You guys are a bit more, like, hesitant. You keep to yourselves a little bit more, which I sort of admire as well.
Well, today what we want to be talking about is sort of go through the journey of us in Australia, how our cultures began, how we were brought together, and where we're going. So I wanted to start at the real start, the settlement of New Zealand and Australia, because that was the first piece in the puzzle of building the culture. And as you know, Alex, you're a convict.
Yeah, and you're a farmer. We're not so different. we're both scum.
Yeah. So like you said, the commonality, we were both we were sort of middle to lower class New Zealanders, and Australians
were definitely lower.
Yeah.
You were England's loyal acolytes versus, like, England's dissidents and renegades, you know? Like,
exactly. So we were a more wholesome, pure bunch, but it's not a high bar. But anyway, that sort of kicked it off, and that's sort of the start of it, because it shows that the society doesn't have those upper echelons, so there's not that same hierarchical attitude. But basically,
yeah,
because it started off like that and then it came down, and the Australians were all conflict. So what was the sort of history around being a convict and stuff? What'd you go through?
Well, me personally as a convict. Well, I mean, I think it's really funny, like, yeah, because when they seen New Zealand, obviously they saw this really fertile green lands. It was perfect for farming. But in Australia, they looked at it like so many other nations that first came to it, like the Dutch came here first and the French, and they all had the same conclusion. And they were like, this is a bit of a wasteland. There's nothing to gain here, you know. And the English also did that, but they went, this is a bit of a wasteland. This would be a great place to put you know, a bunch of people that we don't like, because I obviously just handle the overpopulation of the prison systems back in the 18th century.
Wow. Why were they overpopulated?
To be perfectly honest, I don't have any clue, but from what I could tell, pretty much everyone was, people were getting locked up for the smallest of crimes. I mean, to get in, to become like a convict, you didn't have to be like a murderer.
You could steal apples and stuff. It was during the Industrial Revolution where people were living in slums and poor and hungry and horrible working conditions. And so you'd have to steal sometimes.
Yeah. So it was probably just like a way to persecute the poor, essentially, that anyone that might have, risen up.
It was really in flavor at the time to be very strict and stern with a thin upper lip.
Well, a lot of our convicts too, they were like, a lot of them were Irish, a lot of them, like Scottish and like areas that, that basically back then
were what they racist. Considered them,
their minorities, essentially. So yeah, they were just probably looking for any excuse to get rid of people that didn't really agree with the system. But yeah, so like stealing a loaf of bread or anything like that could get you sent to Australia as a convict. And it would have been like the harshest place you could think, because everyone's used to the cool climate coming over to Australia, like, put the work and I don't think there was huge plans to develop the country for a while.
No.
It was just literally convicts,
a holding space that sort of started forming the Australian culture, did it? And is that where we started seeing some of that more confident, more
I think that, because you're looking at contrast, like the difference between New Zealand and Australia, our culture was born at a time of sort of like being disloyal to the crown, or the people that did fundamentally make up a part of the Australian culture weren't people that were avid supporters of
the crown.
Yeah, of England. So whereas we always see like New Zealand as like being a bit more, you guys are loyal. Yeah, more patriotic to Britain. And I feel like it still is a little bit, you guys are a little bit more English than us.
Oh, no, exactly. Sense, yeah. And that's what my dad always says. Australians have that American style to them. So
that's true, yeah.
Like,
absolutely.
We do point our attention in different directions. And we do carry more of the UK principles, whether that's Scottish or English, more subdued.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely worse about the whole American culture thing too. We sort of really adopted after the Second World War, is when Britain couldn't really help us. Like, we were getting bombed by the Japanese, and America kind of stepped in and sort of saved us. So after that, we just got this influx of American culture, and we're sort of more admiration for our new best buddy. That's why we always follow America into any conflict. I feel like you guys are a little bit more reserved with that sort of thing. So more
we
loyal
still,
to the
Yeah, we still throw our hand and we went to Korea with you guys, which was pretty rare. New Zealand's defense strategy is basically just contribute enough that we hope that they'll protect us if we get invaded.
Yeah, exactly.
So we do follow, but we don't go all guns blazing Australia seems to.
Oh, yeah, we go in guns blazing looking for glory. You go in as, like, basically doing the bare minimum to prevent.
Yeah, we just send our SAS squad, who sound incredible, but,
Yeah.
Because the other thing is, when I was in Australia, I went to an air show and there was jet fighters that were going supersonic. And then I went on a submarine. So there's this real, have an army that, like, your
that's
guys'
so,
army.
That's so annoying. I always find that we do spend so much on military, and we consider that very important. It feels like America in that sense that, like, we've got to defend ourselves. We've got to defend ourselves. Your defense in, diplomatic relations seems to be more like, let's just get along with everyone. Hopefully they won't pick on us. We will show our might. You show, your friendliness.
Yeah.
your benevolence.
Basically, that one of the real interesting difference of New Zealand versus Australia at the moment is, on the show, I had Nan Lee, who's a pro-CCP Chinese communist. And he said New Zealand is China's best buddy at the moment, and New Zealand as the talking point to connect to the Western media. So it was a dense episode, but it was real interesting.
So you're like devil's advocate on the...
and because we don't commend anything. And what's happened in Australia now is you guys are speaking really tough words to China, aren't you?
Yeah, we're getting sanctioned for it. So, yeah, it's like China's literally touching us. They're punishing us for, like, having a voice. And exactly. I think that's really, it's a really strange concept in a foreign market. And I mean, like, you think it would just be business. Like, why is anything personal in that sense? But
because we disagree.
It's like New Zealand was like, oh yeah, we should back up Australia. And then China was
we haven't been so lean. Like, we barely touched on the Five Eyes hack. In New Zealand, we recently found a spy in the country, and they're refusing to publicize what country it's from. So that's really interesting. Yeah. And like you said, we're really trying to do enough, but do as little as we can. But like you said, the way China's been approaching you guys is what we've seen them start doing all around the world is sanctioning, which is sort of modern day bullying because you're punishing countries economically. Yeah.
That's the way you take over countries these days is economically, isn't it? You can just sort of, it's very insidious and it doesn't have that same, I think the days of like invading a country. Yeah, you don't invade a country anymore with like military might so much. It's more, military is really there just to sort of threaten that you have the potential.
It's a bargaining chip, but like you said, modern warfare theory, and especially with nukes and stuff, is that just going to straight out war is not economically a good return on investment. And what you want to do is slowly encroach on a culture and take over key infrastructure and power in a country. And then that way, it's like the frog in the pot. If the frog jumps in a pot that's hot, it's going to jump out. But like we've seen in Hong Kong, if it goes from cold to hot, and you've seen the media, we're not talking about it. It's at the point of everyone's given up. The protests have stopped. And that's been like a 5-year execution.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
Okay, moving on about the warfare, because that's the next subject, is we saw the differences. New Zealand were sort of more shy, more patriotic farmers, and Australians were more gunslinging Americans. What sort of first united us together, really, was the First World War. The arising of the Anzac culture.
That's it. It's like unified convicts with the farmers and gave us a common enemy, I suppose. Ever since then, I think that's really strengthened our ties because we were fairly separate in that sense before that, I think.
Yeah.
But it's funny. It's funny because like New Zealand actually used to be part of New South Wales, apparently, I read.
Yeah, it was. The administration was in New South Wales, I think. And like you said, we didn't actually know each other because the body of water is so long, you don't go for a holiday.
Oh, especially back
then.
You
never visit. Like,
it wasn't any convicts, I don't think, that were like, I might spend the summer in Auckland this year.
Well, but that's fascinating because some of the first settlers were up in Russell in New Zealand, which was a whaling village. And they used to call it the hellhole of the South Pacific because all the Australian convicts who had escaped and come over would all drink rum and there was a lot of prostitution. And the Waitangi Treaty Grounds was across, which was like the pure, and you can see Russell, which was the hellhole of the South Pacific. But anyway, like you said, there wasn't much contact. And then we went to basically Gallipoli.
That's it.
The invention of the term mateship actually arose from that because it's actually a very unique part of both our culture is sort of banter and sort of take it on the chin humor.
Yeah.
And sort of like, we don't have complainers here. So they really think that one of our biggest unifying cultural things is mateship. And that's where our fundamental morals lie quite similar.
Yeah, definitely. It's I suppose, especially because we formed that not from a victory, realistically, too. That was actually a tragic, massive loss.
Wow. And I think that played into our morals that came out of it.
Yeah, I suppose as well as that, we're both two nations that were quite let down by like our motherland, essentially. Yeah. As well, I think that sort of unified us as like being, you know, two brothers.
Shit together against the man.
Exactly. That's it. But yeah.
Just a brief backdrop around Gallipoli. Basically, the whole World War was on the Western Front. So they had taken over France and they were hitting England. And Winston Churchill was a commander at the time. And he had this idea of doing a pincer. So they would attack from, you know, in France and from the West. But
yeah, we would come up from the south. Yeah,
we would come up from the south and sort of closer to the Middle East, you know, because it's in Turkey, Gallipoli.
Yeah,
we'd come in from there.
Exactly.
So it was a huge idea. So Winston Churchill's like, we're gonna pincer them. We're gonna get all the foreigners. So that's where we saw why New Zealand and Australia went there, because we would train closer to Egypt and went up that way.
So, yeah, I think as well, probably we're used to the climate and sort of that sort of terrain as well.
Oh, it was beautiful. You know, I actually went to Gallipoli when I was
traveling. I hadn't had a chance to.
Yeah, I was really lucky. I caught up with some friends on the Mongo Rally, and Turkey, honestly, guys, is my favorite country. I highly recommend it. But we drove down to Anzac Cove, and it was actually one of those really spiritual moments on the trip. Like, we went there and then we went for a swim, and when I was just in the ocean, it was down further on the beach, but you could see where the boats would have been shot up. And then essentially the backdrop is it's flat all around, but there's one massive hill on the point that they picked, and it was the steepest incline of anything around it.
Yeah.
Just swimming, and I could really for the first time visualize it. And it's a really cool place because you can go to the mass graves, and basically the Anzacs tried to push up on this cliff line, and there's a place called Lone Pine. So the whole point was you wanted to hold the hills. So basically the whole time in Anzac and part of that mateship was, we got to defend the hill. Tough it out, boys. We're like, we're staying.
That was you guys too. I think the Kiwis actually held that position, didn't they? You guys got quite massacred.
Because there were such narrow passes up. It was like a real pin here that you had to go through. Like, it wasn't a sprawling location. And essentially, like you said, stuff like the English would give up the post quicker, and a lot of the English,
because
the English were the captains as well. So there was a lot of disappointment and resentment. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that bitterness of realize that you're sort of a little bit second class. And then we went to the top of it where the Turkish was, and they still had the trenches, and you see where the machine gun placements were. You got a full view of the beach. You're just going duh, 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 duh,
Jesus.
All day.
It must have been so poignant to see that. After all these whole thing's over, I'll have to check it out myself.
Would highly recommend it. And I would also highly recommend Te Papa in Wellington. Peter Jackson did a World War One memorial. So anyone listening, you can go, and there's all these sculptures about 3 times, 5 times human size of these people in the war. And the detail, it's the coolest expedition I've ever been.
Look at you doing a promo for New Zealand, just like your Prime Minister.
Oh, yeah.
Come to New Zealand. The theme of this podcast today is actually just promoting tourism. Okay. We've been in everyone, the world has been in a recession. This is a time to come out.
Yeah. That's probably a good place to move on, like you said. The other thing to come out of that was the idea of tall poppy syndrome. So that was a real combiner for us, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And it's funny that I feel like that we've both got a slight variation on how we approach that too. Because like, I feel you guys in New Zealand, you guys suffer from that even more than we do.
Tall poppy syndrome. So-
Yeah, yeah, I feel like both nations are both quite known for it. You know, like if you compare us internationally to other nations, I think there's a difference between New Zealand and Australia in terms of how we see it, because it's standing out a little bit from the crowd in Australia is not as bad. Like it's not seen as, it's not knocked back as quickly. I don't know if you've noticed.
Exactly. This, but- no, I know what you mean, because say celebrations, whether it's interesting in cricket, a New Zealand celebration, like Kane Williamson looks pathetic when he scores 100. He just lifts his bat and sort of flops it round. And then you see David Warner, who jumps in the air, spins round, kisses the helmet, and then punches the air.
It's quite a contrast, isn't it? Jeez, you make us look like dicks. We're definitely much more arrogant, that's for sure. We are so much more cocky, but, and I think that's what plays into it.
But I love that, because that's the feeling I get. If I scored 100 runs in a cricket game, I'm going to party, you know? I'm not going to sit there and like, meh.
You guys are so much more reserved than us. It's so funny. Like that's the distinct difference between Australians and New Zealanders. If you have trouble telling the difference between the accent internationally, there's always a key difference. It's just like, how loud are they speaking to begin with?
Exactly.
Is he using a lot of hand movements and gestures? Is he like punching the air? and carrying on. Because it's so funny, I should tell you a story about that, actually. So when I was living in Liverpool, I was working in this restaurant, and this guy came up to me that was working there, goes, "Oh, that table over there is full of Australians." But I was like, "Oh, well, I'll have a listen." And I walked over to the bar area to sort of just stand there and listen back to try to pick, because I figured they could either be Australian or New Zealand, because, you know, no one can tell the difference overseas. Yeah. And I was listening, and I was about 3 or 4 meters away, and not within, I was trying to be a bit discreet, but I couldn't hear them speaking at all. So I was like, okay, they sound Australian, but I can't hear them speaking from 3 or 4 meters away. They're New Zealanders. Sure enough, found out later on, they are in fact Kiwis, because Australians are the loudest in the room.
Yeah, I know.
And I could pick them from a mile away. They were Americans.
I was thinking of moving to Sydney, and a Sydney local guy, he was Australian, and he's like, "You got to be prepared for some really intense people, you know? There's some big egos."
No, actually, what you just said there, that actually might be it too. Yeah. Like, you were saying cities, right?
I think so.
Because Australia has cities. We think about, like, we've got 5 million people living in Sydney, 5 million in Melbourne, 2 in Adelaide, Perth and Brisbane. Our population is so much city people. And I suppose most of the people in those areas, they're so competitive. Whereas you guys only really have Auckland. That's the only major city that you really have. So that maybe that's where that competitive drive is, like, a little bit. Because in Sydney, if you don't try to stand out, you know, you're gonna get left behind. And I think that's why we're probably pulling away as Australians, in our nation at least, from the tall poppy syndrome. And you guys are still a little bit, like, you're coming out of it too, but at a slower rate. And that's probably where we're seeing the disparity between the two.
Wow.
That might be. I mean, it could be conjecture.
No, I totally agree, actually. It probably goes back to that, and to back why we're still so much quieter than Australians and stuff like that. So I guess we've sort of nailed down the difference in traits and cultures at the moment. And I just wanted to sort of move on to just where we're at now in modern Australia and New Zealand, because basically the road we've gone down now is Australia's achieved a lot of economic success. Like, you guys per capita have the highest wages in the world now. In New Zealand, we are still technically, in terms of GDP and monetary measures, we're a poor OECD country.
Yeah, poorer at least, yeah.
Poorer, exactly. So you guys had economic success, but where we've had success is a healthier democracy. So we've seen Australia democracy just be a shambles, and New Zealand democracy so good. Jacinda today ranked 7% for people in UK for most inspiring person in the world. So 7% of people in the UK think Jacinda's the most inspiring person in the world at the moment. So it shows you how on a pedestal our democracy is.
Yeah, no one ever speaks bad about her. And you guys, you guys have a very stable government generally. We have, like, politician after politician of, like, they get removed from office and new ones get put in. Half the ones we don't even vote for, they just get replaced and, like, moved out and moved in. And our politicians are always so much controversy. So much backstabbing. But even just, like, the things they come out with, the stuff they say.
Sexual assault, isn't there?
There's lots of sexual assault allegations now going on. But there's just, like, just generally, there's always been, like, as far as I've known, it's been such a normal political landscape for me to expect politicians to be in hot water or say something that is really out of touch or inappropriate. Or some things are just, like, ridiculously funny, and, like, I can't believe our politicians are, like, a laughing stock. Yeah.
It's like an American-style government a little bit more.
Absolutely. And that's, it's not much different to what you were saying before, when saying Australia's a bit more American. We are politically too. So you guys don't have the drive economically. And as a result, there's a lot of Kiwis that have been moving over to Australia for work.
Money.
Absolutely. It's funny because, like, when they first proposed this Trans-Tasman thing, you know, like back in the 70s, I think. It's funny, your prime minister at the time, I think he was Robert Muldoon, when he was questioned about it, he said that, like, his response to it was really funny. He's like, it'll raise the IQ of both countries.
Yeah.
I thought that was the ultimate sass. I'm sure we didn't like it at the time, but I guess we weren't really smart enough to come up with a decent comeback.
Just some context on that joke. I remember finding that one so funny. So when they decided to open freedom of movement between New Zealand and Australia, he said, it would raise the IQ of both countries, because basically all the dumb people would leave New Zealand. So New Zealand average IQ would go up, but our dumb people would be smarter than the average Aussie, so their IQ would go up. So it's this genius it's a win-win, but it's also like, you guys just not.
I know. I thought it was a pretty clever comeback. Because of that, I think people are focused less. A lot of people are focused less on economics, and I heard that there's actually a huge shift in that, and there is now a lot of Aussies actually moving over to New Zealand for more stable life, because like the political structure in the world at large is quite like a sort of scary and unpropitious sort of situation.
So that's where it's sort of interesting, because New Zealand sort of, we called it the brain drain. The whole idea was all our smart people were moving to Australia. And we were losing tens of thousands a year because of that economic thing. But we've seen a flip towards New Zealand ahead now, not because of our economy, but because of our democracy. So now we're seeing for people. Wow. So it really shows you that democracy's been in decline around the world, that that's now a really attractive. And because it's attractive for companies as well, because stability of a country is a massive risk for investments. Definitely. But anyway, what I wanted to say next is, what's the future for this? We've seen the sort of momentum swing New Zealand ways. Where are we going together and differently? Are our paths merging, or are we going down more and more separate paths now?
I'm not sure. I feel like we're still getting closer and closer together these days.
I feel like you guys are respecting us a little bit more now that we have.
Yeah.
Australians look at us now, and talking to my Australian friends, they acknowledge that New Zealand are better in certain aspects as a country.
Yeah. That's always been the jokes always at our Kiwis. It's always been like thinking back to like my dad's generation has always been just taking the piss out of New Zealanders, like either your accents or something to do with sort being of really a crass jokes about sheep and things like
sheep
that.
Sheep shaggers and stuff.
Yeah. And that sort of like mentality is like really is dying off. Like I hate it when my dad like holds me verbally hostage with a fucking like a joke that I have to like participate in, listen to, and then I'm obligated to laugh at. Like, otherwise he'll think that I just didn't get it, or I'm just like, I've got a tumor in my humor or something like that. Yeah. Like, not funny.
Oh, yeah.
You're right. I think Australians at large are, like, I generally hear less sort of
patronizing.
Digging into the little brother sort of thing. Mm. I was wondering actually what that's like on your point of view, because I always felt like you guys talk about Australia a lot more than we ever talk about you guys.
Exactly, because we're sort of the picked on little brother that we sort of look back like, Australians are dickheads.
Yeah, I know. And when you ask, like most of the time, like you guys aren't on our mind at all. No offense. It's almost, I want to say this gently as I can, but we kind of nothing you in that sense. Like we don't.
And that's what we've really struggled with. Wow.
Yeah.
So
now you've got a stronger identity now. It's like, I feel like it's less of a problem.
Wow. Because, so just to summarize it, like you said, we're now standing on our two feet as an equal, and we have our own identity. So Australia is looking back and sort of taking us more seriously. So it's going to be really interesting.
I think you'll see a brain drain the other way around next soon.
And I guess with COVID, and now we're in this warm hug that we were talking about with the travel, we're getting more connected than we ever have been for a long, long time. Yeah. And now, especially with the tensions in Asia, we're going to see New Zealand probably coming together. So I hope the banter doesn't get worse.
Oh, yeah. Well, I hope we always have that, at least the banter, as long as if it's decent, that is, you know.
Cool. Cool.
Not shitty sheep jokes and accents and shit.
Exactly. So just to summarize, it looks like we're getting closer. It looks like it's getting more positive, and hopefully Australia works out their democracy issues.
Oh. Yeah, I feel like, honestly, that in that sense, I feel like we're going to get worse. You guys need to come over and govern us. I've been petitioning for this for years. I think that Jacinda Ardern should actually be Prime Minister of Australia. Did you know that there's actually a clause in your constitution that allows New Zealand to join Australia?
Yeah, okay.
Like, let's like not that do will that. Ever happen.
Let's not bring maybe, that
I,
up.
I feel like it should be the other way around anyway.
Totally. So I think that's a great place to leave it. Basically, we're coming close together, but it's because New Zealand's rising and maybe soon New Zealand might be on top, mate. So
that's it.
Get used to it, little brother.
Well, it looks like I'm going to have to start that plan B that I said to you. I'll come over and see you. We'll do the podcast in person.
Oh, in New Zealand. Okay. Yeah. I look forward to it. Don't stay too long, though. Thanks for coming on, Alex.
Yeah, thanks, mate. I appreciate it. Always.
Talk soon. We've got many more episodes together. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I hope you love that. That was a really, really cool way to talk about New Zealand and Australia. And I hope you enjoyed sort of the history from start to end about our journey separately and together and that intertwining in and out we've done. So thanks for listening, guys. Please share this podcast if you think one of your Aussie mates or Kiwi mates might love it. Keep sharing the word. I love making these. And please hit subscribe and I'll talk to you guys all very soon.
That was The Big Picture. Hit the subscribe and share the word.